We are live. All right. Hello, 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 and what up, though? Welcome to the Cannabiz Show. That rhymed, and I wasn't even doing that on purpose. That's what's up. Hello, everybody out there. If you are watching, say hello, hello in the comments. Please let me know who's out there. Let me know who you are. Where you watching from, all that. We got a great show for everybody today. Again, this is the Cannabiz Show brought to you by Craft Cannabis Club in conjunction with Cannabis Therapy Network. Yes, that's right here, over here. And Craft Cannabis Club and the podcast. Yes, we are live and we are going to be talking about getting into the cannabis game and your cannabis business plan. We're going to be talking about creating a business plan. We're going to be talking about the company overview. We'll be talking about the business model. We're going to give you guys some tips on your business plan and getting into the cannabis industry. And you are allowed to please, please engage. Please ask all the questions as we are presenting and actually speaking. We have a special guest I'm going to introduce in a second. But as we get into the presentation, please, by all means, ask questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, you're watching this on Facebook, Instagram, all that jazz, ask your questions and we will definitely try to answer as many as we can. We're going to try to wrap this up by 4 o'clock. Yeah. Actually, what time is it now? Shoot. Is it, it's 3 o'clock. Yeah, 4 o'clock. We're going to go for an hour. Cool. All right. So without any further ado, we have a lot to get into. Again, if you are watching us live, please say hello. Let me know who you are, where you're watching it from. Hello to you too as well. All right. Without any further ado, we're going to introduce our special guest. This is the Cannabiz Show. Hello to you too. This is the Cannabiz Show and brought to you by the Craft Cannabis Club. And the Craft Cannabis Club is a private club for mature cannabis adults. We provide this unique vibe. It's all about the vibe so that you can have a comfortable place, just whether online or offline, where you could be you to share resources, make connections, because we believe it takes an ecosystem of like-minded people to really continue to try to end this disastrous war on drugs. That's what we're about. And this is us fulfilling what we're about as far as making connections and educating and sharing resources. So even if you are, this is Cannabiz Connect. If you're in the cannabis industry, you're even in the comments, you can say, hey, my name is Joe Bob, and I am looking for a plumber. I want you to make connections before you grow or whatever it is. Please, you can also do that in your comments as well. Everybody can kind of engage with each other. All right, cool. I'm going to introduce her. We have a lot to get into. I'm going to introduce our guest today to help talk to us about... Hello. Hello to you, Mr. Wells. I say hello. He's going to talk to us about getting to the cannabis industry and about your business plan. Mr. Smith, Ellis Smith, has over 20 years. I'm going to read this here because I was actually impressed before I even read this. I was like, wow, this man's legit. Mr. Smith has over 20 years of horticulture experience owning and operating businesses and international business experience in Central Asia, working in a specialty cut flower market. Running indoor gardens early in his career helped him to understand complex growing systems and production protocols while developing his master gardening skills. Yes, this man can grow. This man can grow. He not only is going to teach us the business side of consulting, he can actually grow. Some of his accomplishments includes assisting in the identification of hemp russet mites within the Colorado medical cannabis market and working with Skunk Magazine to enlighten and educate the industry. Additional articles in Skunk Magazine highlighted his use of the True Living Organics cultivation methodology in a regulated commercial market. He has featured in articles in Dope Magazine and Scentsy Magazine, and he leads a monthly webinar on cannabis tech where he features guest speakers in the cannabis industry. Additionally, he has been a speaker and a panel expert at numerous industry events. To date, Mr. Smith, along with the American Cannabis Company, Inc., has designed and built over 1 million square feet of cultivation space. That's a lot of weed. With another 250,000 square feet under construction, there's going to be a lot more weed. Mr. Smith's career path has positioned him to play an integral role in helping both individual companies to succeed, as well as aiding aiding the emerging cannabis industry to prosper as a whole. Woo! Yeah. Without any further ado, hello, Mr. Smith.
That was a mouthful. I appreciate you going through all of that. I appreciate that.
You're the man.
I'm a weed nerd who's passionate about cannabis, I'll tell you. I'm very grateful and fortunate that I get to play with this plant every day and design and build grow facilities and, you know, live my passion. Very grateful for that. Not many people, you get to wake up and chase those passions daily. And luckily, cannabis is that thread that I get to indulge in every day with work, play, and everything I do. So, and I'm very, very grateful to be where I am and do what I do.
It sounds like it's fulfilling, man. You sound
beyond fulfilled.
Like you wake up and you look forward to do what you got to do today.
Every day. I look forward to the next day and the next day ahead. We've done so much great work. I'm a student to my craft. I've been doing this for so long. I'm constantly learning every day. Technology is evolving. And to keep up with that, it's demanded by the people that hire me. And so it makes my job, my craft fun. I'm a student constantly learning and trying to up the game from every project I encounter. So yeah, we nerd out. That's the point, right? Awesome. We want to nerd on this.
Well, we're gonna talk some more, and we're gonna do a live Q&A towards the end. We have a lot to get to right now. We're gonna try to get through this within the hour. I know you have a tight schedule as well. I appreciate your time. Without further ado, man, let me get my slides organized here, and we're gonna jump right into the tips of getting into the cannabis business. You guys, all right, cool. All right, so we're going to get into being successful in a cannabis business and the tips to creating your business plan. And Ellis, I'm just going to let you kind of take it from here.
Perfect. Well, this is the most important step to really starting your business, is putting together a business plan and financial model. This is really going to help you ask yourself all the right questions and really give you a framework and design and an architecture of where you're going to go with your concept and ideas, and really pulling these ideas out of your head. Paper. This is what makes it legitimate. Once you get it out of between these 2 years, get it on that paper, it becomes to life. It becomes reality. It gives you something you can actually look at. So the model for your business is just as important as the product or service you're pitching. It outlines a plan that will take you from pitch to profit. And we can't agree with that more, that this is the whole point of giving you that framework, that architecture, so that you have a focus and direction. And so there's many elements that you need to think about as you look at creating a business plan. First of all, what kind of business do you want to start? Is it cultivation? Is it extraction? Is it dispensary? You got to figure out, where do you want to be in this space? Where's your confidence? Where's your ability to execute come in? Once you can kind of figure that out, then you got to understand, okay, what is that market capacity or potential? Is there room for me to come in here and be able to take a share of this and be able to say, all right, I can manage 2 to 5% of this space, and I can come in here and do it well. And you need to understand where you fit into that market. And then you got to look at your value proposition versus your competitors. Why are you different? What makes you shine above the rest? What is your model? Who are you really targeting as we look at the next step down? Like, who is your target market? Who is your customer? Who is it that you're really trying to differentiate from and bring into your stores? Is it people over 60? Is it people that are 21 to 25? Are you looking for the baby boomers? Like, where does your market and where are you targeting for? And you've got to really ask yourself these questions and truly understand, who is it you're going after? You've got to know this to really design the look, the feel, the taste of the products you're either cultivating, the dispensary that you're designing, or the extraction products that you plan on selling to the marketplace. You know, baby boomers, they have no clue how to use a dab rig and how to use a shatter or wax, but they may want a vapor cartridge because it's super simple and it's not as harsh on their lungs versus a joint, and they don't want to stink like a joint. And so you got to know, who is this that you're going after? Mm-hmm. Once you understand these things, really, what is your channels of distribution? Where do you think you can distribute these things to? If you are a cultivator, are you doing a wholesale aspect? Are you vertically integrated and putting it through your dispensary? Are you just growing it just for extraction? How do you distribute this stuff? Where is it going to? And how are you really going to access the market with this? A lot of people do a really good job of growing the product, but then they have a hard time of selling it because that's not their core. Sometimes you have to call and cold call and say, hey, I've got 40 pounds of sour diesel, 20 pounds of OG, and you know, 10, 10 ounces of whatever extract. You got to be able to know how to pick up the phone or how to use your resources and network around you so that you really can distribute and get those right relationships for that long-term confidence that you can push the product into the marketplace. And so know that channels of distribution. And then that kind of leads into strategic partnerships. Align yourself with resources in the marketplace that have been doing this for years, that know it, and that can align with your values and align with how you want to run business and can be that that resource to assist you to really go out in the marketplace and be strength in numbers, I'll say. Really to kind of bring these people along with you and their experience. It makes you look better when you're tied in with people that have this acumen and long-term kind of presence already in the space. And so go out there and develop those relationships. A lot of this stuff is kissing babies and shaking hands. You know, that whole political aspect. You got to lobby locally for yourself. This is how you really can create a foothold and a sustainable business model that will go long term. And then obviously this last one here is, what are those possible streams of revenue? From a cultivation standpoint, are you going to grow wholesale flower only? From an extraction standpoint, are you going to do an edibles? Are you going to do a smokable product? Are you going to do just oils only? Figure out what is that ratio of products that you want to distribute and what those revenue streams can look like. And this is really where the nuts and bolts come down to your business to truly understand where is that most revenue you can make while diversifying these different SKUs or products that you're going to be selling. And so know the products that you want to sell and what those ratios are to figure out where is the maximum amount of revenue you can make. Because at the end of the day, it's all about making money. I love growing and planting is so much fun, but man, cashing those checks is a lot more damn fun. I'll tell you that.
No, you made some great points, and I love what you said as far as getting it out of your mind and actually thinking it through. I mean, when you talk about your target, your market, a lot of people just think, oh, you know, I'm just going to sell weed to whoever wants to buy weed. I'm just going to go after kids. But there's a lot of different other niches. Can you give some more examples of maybe some different niches that people can actually target to give them an idea of it's not just everybody? Sure.
I mean, all the way down to your packaging. You know, if you're looking to sell an edibles product and you've got some super exciting packaging that's really you're wanting to go after the baby boomers, but for some reason your packaging is drawing the early 20-year-olds to this. You're missing the mark by understanding who is it you really want and what are those elements that you can tap into so that you can get their attention to look at your product on the shelf, because it is all messaging. From when they walk into a store, it's overwhelming, and they're going to see all this crazy packaging, and they're going to say, "Okay, depending on your demographic, some folks may say, I want a dabbable product that I can get high with." Okay, well, that's an easy sale to go to. If you want to go for a women-based product or women demographic, you've got to think outside the box. Your branding and the way the packaging is presented to them has to focus on that element versus a young 20-year-old or baby boomer who's that much older. Once again, as you look at the different flower products you may want to grow, if you're a wholesale cultivator, right, maybe you're not trying to grow the highest THC. Maybe you're specializing on THC and CBD blends. Maybe you're focusing on terpene specific and you don't even care about these THC and CBD numbers. And you're really branding around focusing on, now it's not about the THC level. It's about the experience. I've got a flower that's calm. I've got a flower that's energetic. I've got a calm for, I've got a flower for sleep. How do you message these things to the right demographic? And these are the way we're trying to really, you know, lay this out so that you know exactly who is the message for, and that we know we can immediately grab their attention by the messaging we put out there. So it's super important to know that.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, when you just mentioned about people looking at the experience, people are now looking towards the effect, right? It's, you know, it's okay, what's going to help me sleep? What's going to help me calm down? What's going to help me actually get pain relief? So yeah, and you can break, there's so many different ways you can break this down, but yeah, we got a lot. I know we're going to keep going, but I just want to touch on that right now. But sure, there's some more things you want to kind of talk about as far as different sectors that people can get into as well.
Okay, so yeah, so this is, you know, really looking at, you know, where's your interest first and foremost? What interests you? Are you an extract person? That's all you want to consume? then why the hell would you want to go and grow flour? Why don't we put you in a lab where your passion and your interest are and you know all about it, right? And so this is the question you want to ask yourself. Maybe you've worked at Starbucks for 20 years and you know inventory control from a very professional standard and system. And you're like, man, I could crush the way these dispensaries are run and operated. I hate how slow and how backed up they are. They don't get retail. Maybe you've got that experience. Tap into that. That's what you want to focus on. Where is your interest and passion that you know you're never going to lose that? And that's where you need to focus that energy. And so there's so many different aspects of this industry to tap into. And a lot of people may start in one and they get exposed to all the other ones and become experts at all of them. And I see a lot of fascinating nerds that have really done this over their career and they're experts in every realm of this stuff. And it's just really just to show you that you can do this. Don't be afraid to take on more than one of these business opportunities here, because a lot of people are doing it. So, you know, your wholesale cultivators, this is probably your biggest expensive business model to get into. This has the biggest capital expenditure and operational expenses. Okay. So this requires a certain amount of funding and a certain amount of knowledge base. You're going to be biting off a very big chunk of rent each month. You're going to be building out a very large facility to be competitive, have the most staff working for you. And so you've got to look at each one of these opportunities and say, man, I don't know if I got $4 or $5 million to do this versus, hey, for a retail dispensary facility, I've seen in some markets, prime example, Oklahoma. Most people can go get a license for $150 or the price is $1,000. They can go rent a retail store for $1,500 a month. They can basically build out the interior of the retail experience for $50,000, and now they got a dispensary operational. Wow. Now, does it give you that Starbucks look? No, but you know what? They're selling flour on the counter, and they got stock shelves, and they're making good money because they got process procedure in place. Now, you can also go and spend $250,000, $500,000. I've seen them spend $800,000 on dispensaries, depending on where they are, who is their demographic, who are they targeting. All of these things will make up and help you understand, you know, what type of retail facility do I want to design? And so we understand that the infusion is another business model. This has a high cost to get in, nowhere near the cultivation, but your minimum going to be anywhere from $750,000 and up to do the extraction side. And that really depends on size and scale and these types of things to understand what type of equipment goes in there. Testing labs, this is a really, really narrow niche. This is really where you do see the true science nerds. And I hate to use that because I love all my science friends. Yeah, I'm a nerd. These guys have really been, they understand analytical testing from whatever career path they've taken. They're classically trained from that. So it's a natural fit for these guys to go into testing. Unless you don't have that background and experience, that's most people don't go down that route if they're a cannabis enthusiast. Now, I do see some very sharp investors who say, oh, I know some good friends of mine who are analytical chemists and they want to get into this. And so we're going to start a business and go at this. And I see them do very well at this. It takes a certain type of individual, though, to really get into the testing side. Consumption lounges, this is the new one. This is the hot ticket. This is the future. This is the big, big thing coming for us. And it's the normalcy of our industry. I can't wait for this shit to happen. I'm ready to go. I can bring out my computer, I can pull out my damn pipe and my grinder, and I can smoke my sour D, and I can get to work, and no one look at me like I'm crazy.
Man, everybody's waiting for this, man.
You know, and this is at 8 o'clock in the morning, you know, I an environment I can thrive in like this, you know? And so this is the future. This is really evolving. Colorado is allowing it. There's a handful of them here. They're still kind of not meeting my expectation of what I want out of the experience, so I don't really attend them that often. I will say I'm working on a badass project in Oakland that will be unlike anything you've ever seen before. Social equity guy won the license. He's got a 12,000 square foot facility. It will be a dispensary that's 3,000 square foot in this 12,000 square foot social consumption lounge and music venue. And the whole 12,000 square foot actually acts as a dispensary, meaning not only is there a dispensary you can go in and shop in and not have to go to the venue, you can also be in the venue, go to like a bar, like you're going to get a cocktail and order your shit there as well and go back to your seat and hang out. And it's a full-on music venue, 500-seat place. So get ready to see some cool, cool stuff coming as our new norm is literally happening as we speak. And I'm living and breathing a badass project right now that I can't really expose too much, but man, this
Man, you're teasing us.
So I'm just highly encouraged for everyone out there, man, this is the new kind of angle to look at business models. It is a lounge concept. It is a coffee shop mindset. And so you got to figure out how to monetize it. It's a little tricky because they don't usually allow you to distribute on site.
Yeah.
Figure out a way to be next door to a dispensary, figure out a discount or some type of coupon program between them. So you can get some type of commission or referral, whatever the hell you call it, or you charge a daily use fee or a membership fee. I don't know, but this is waiting to pop and really emerge and be a big game changer overall for all of us. And so I highly encourage people to look at the consumption lounges because, man, it's new, it's fresh, and it's going to be game changer for us.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned, you know, as far as the cost of getting into a lot of these other different businesses, and of course, it does vary from state to state. You mentioned Oklahoma, which has probably one of the lowest barriers into the entry, but it works out great.
It does.
It works out. It's, but you know, like in Michigan, you know, you have, you know, if you're looking to do a retail store, you're looking to do an infused product, or even certain grows, you have to have a medical license before you can apply for an adult use retail license. And that medical license, I mean, just to get your foot in the door with the application, you're talking 75 to 80,000 just getting through the application.
Yep. And it could take 6 months to 18 months to get fully to operation or even to construction. It's crazy.
Yeah. And so, but you look at these consumption lounges and you talk about social equity and even event planning. I mean, this could be a way. And again, we're giving you guys different ideas on when you're thinking through your business model. We're still talking about the business model. And as you have these ideas and you're thinking through, I mean, the first thing most people think about is, oh, I'm just going to have a dispensary, right? Or a grow. But there's a lot of other different ways. And then it's going back to what you talked about as far as who are you trying to serve, your target market. And then you're kind of reverse engineering. All right. How can I serve them through lounges? How can I serve them with the events? How can I serve them with my product? Yeah. Yeah. Now, the ancillary services, we kind of talked about that. Now, these are the. Do you think that this right here, for those who have been impacted the most by this war on drugs and, of course, getting access to capital, which we're going to talk about those tips in a second. With these ancillary services, do you see this as a potential to also really be profitable in the industry as well?
Hardcore. And I dabble in the ancillary side as well. And I'll give you kind of an analogy. You may have heard this before. You know, back in the gold rush, they always say that the guys who sold the picks and shovels are the ones who made all the money.
Yeah.
It's no different here with these ancillary services provided to the operators, the security companies, the payment processing. You've got task management software, you've got POS software, you've got accounting services, you've got, you know, CO2 services. There's a slew of ancillary businesses that support us in so many different ways, from architects, engineers, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, so many different of your professional services that are out there that are a huge support to who we are. And so for some of you folks who maybe you're an architect or maybe you've got, you know, background working in OSHA, find your angle. There's a way to take your interest, your passion. And it's like, I want to keep reiterating this to our community, that find your passions, find your interest. It's not a job anymore when you show up and come to work every day, and it allows you to really not look at this as, I got to wake up, I got to do this. Find your interest. Figure out what that is. It's going to make it so much easier for you. Don't go force yourself to do something that it's just going to be an uphill battle and you can't see the top of the mountain. Don't do that.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't mean the tangent on that, but I want to just make that up.
No, I love it. No, that's a great point. I mean, I know we're still on tip number one. We got four more tips we're about to get to in a second. But no, and for those, you know, you talk about you find your passion. So say you even grow and maybe, you know, you love growing at home, but, you know, getting a wholesale license does seem to be a far stretch for you. It doesn't mean you just can't get it. You just don't just got to keep complaining and be, oh, man, just, I can't get into industry. You just mentioned a couple different ways. Okay, maybe you can do consulting. All right. Start with that. And not everyone, there's plenty of room to you be you and you have your niche and start consulting those type of people or businesses. So, yeah, I think there's still room for people as you look at your model and you do your research. There's still a way that you can still get into this industry, and don't let the capital or don't let the licensing actually push you away.
Man, it's all in the willpower. If you say you can, you can. If you say you can't, you can't. I mean, I'll leave, man, you know, I mean, it's all in your head.
Awesome, awesome. No, I agree. I mean, with that said, we're going to go to tip number two. So that's the business model. And, you know, as far as in your head, you say you can, you can, you say you can, you can't. Let's take a glimpse into the business of the overview, the objectives, and the summary of how you can and why this should be included or how it's best to position it in your cannabis business plan.
Yep. And so these are really the foundation and backbone is really understanding from a big picture, what they call that big 50,000 foot view. What are you doing? What's the idea of the project? You know, we want to do a dispensary. All right, cool. We want to have it in a certain part of town. Okay, cool. Well, I know I want a certain motif. All right, we got a good overview here. Now, what's the objective? Well, man, I want to target the baby boomers and people over 60. I watched my mother get sick and I see her problems with sleeping and I got her to smoke, you know, whatever joint or whatever vapor pen. And this is our objective. I want to go after those people. All right, perfect. Now we can start to put the nuts and the bolts together to really tell that true story. And this general executive summary is really that concise message of taking that overview, those really specific objectives you're going after, and now kind of laying this out there. And this is really going to help catapult how we now write this big 80 to 150 page business plan, depending on you know, how long or lengthy your what your business model looks like. But this is really the start of how you get this thing going out of the head onto paper and be bringing this thing to life. So now you can actually show something to somebody versus just spitballing. You sound so much more intelligent when you can actually show somebody something versus spitballing. And so just take that to heart. Just it's super important to say, yeah, I've got it written down. Just check this out. I'll send you my deck. Make them sound like I've got, you know what you're doing, and we can really build on these things, you know? And so that general executive summary, that's really going to be that concise message to really now lay this thing out in detail so that we can really truly tell the story of these are the owners. These are their backgrounds. This is the experience they bring to this business model. This is why they've chosen the dispensary in the direction they want to go. And now we can start to tell the story of exactly what this looks like from an internal perspective of here's the building, here's the rent, here's the cost, here's the potential revenue, here's the demographics I'm going after, here's how I'm going to market towards them, here's how many people I expect to come into the store daily. I expect them to spend, you know, $75 to $100 every time they visit, and really start to define and lay all these things out. I'm going to kind of read some of these things here. You have here's bullet points. So this information should be clear and concise and written for those who understand cannabis and those who don't. So really put it in layman's terms. There's no need to get fancy and write all this crazy business.
Jargon.
It's simple. Keep it simple, you know, literally. And so I always assume your reader's a cannabis beginner. I love that. Because a lot of people are, these investors, they have no idea what a clone is or what a 12 and 12 is, or I'm going to flip a room. When you start talking like this, I'm like, all right, let's slow down. We need to explain to them what these things mean, because we start to think that everybody has this basic knowledge. Most of these folks don't. They write big checks and they know finances, and that's all they know. Don't drag it out too long. Be sure to cover your bases, including the amount of money you will be seeking and how you plan on making a return, if financial or the investment based. And that's exactly right. We've got to really spell it out in detail. And so the business plan really lays it all out. And then once we lay down the business plan, there's a pro forma model that kind of follows behind this that now really breaks down the true nuts and bolts of every single cost of what we call the capital expenditures, the money you got to go spend up front to go build out the facility, and then the operational expenses to keep this thing running day to day as we are servicing the community and these things. And so all of this stuff is really what's going to tell that story and really paint a clear picture of I know what I'm doing or I don't know what I'm doing.
How long would you say the summary or the overview typically is? Is it like a pager? I know these business plans can get very thick in itself, but the overview in a summary itself, what would you say is a comfortable?
Usually what we say, our general executive summary, it's also, I refer to it as a pitch deck because it's a very concise breakdown of the business plan. That's usually anywhere from about 7 to 10 pages long, because what I'm trying to do is take that 80 to 100 plus pages of information and just shrink it down so that I can give somebody a quick synopsis and say, here you go. Hope that can hook them with what I'm trying to show them. And for the smart investors, they'll say, cool, now let me see the full business plan. Let me see your full pro forma deck. And let me go look at the nuts and bolts that you're basically showing me, this 50,000 foot view. And so 7 to 10 pages is really where that general executive summary will come into to really paint that clear picture.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. So that's our second tip. So we a glimpse into the biz, into that business plan. We talked about the business model. And now we're going to actually go into that third tip about market and marketing.
All right. So this is basically make or break it. This is what now allows you to really get a focus on to who you were reaching out to. Who are you trying to get to buy your products? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. And you're right. I mean, and also if we, you did the first thing you were talking about as far as looking to your target market. And now this kind of goes back into how this all kind of falls into place.
Yep. And so, you know, this first thing, who is your competitor? Who are you up against? You know, I can tell you right now as a company, we are actively pursuing acquisitions of licenses. We're getting back in the operations side. I'm a consultant by trade, but I'm getting back in operations. And my mindset is, line of least resistance. How do I buy a business that's either operational or I can quickly get operational if they're to the finish line almost with their licensing? Immediately, I'm going to look to see who is my competition. If it's a dispensary, who's around me? How close are they to me? How far away are they from me? What is the community allowing more dispensaries to come in and compete with me? Immediately, I'm trying to arm myself with what is the current status of the 10, 15, 20 mile radius around me, and how do I fit into there? How do I get that market share we talked about earlier? Is this is key to understand who we're going after. And you may quickly realize, okay, there's four other dispensaries if we're running that business in this area. Well, we know that they're all targeting, you know, either the baby boomers, or they're going after the 20-year-olds, or they are just don't care. They're just getting where they can come in the store, and they're poor operators. Well, we can quickly learn from who our competitors are and say, okay, don't do this. Let's do that. Let's up the game here. They don't do any branding on SEO, on web-based marketing. Cool, let's make sure we do that. Let's look and see if they're doing kind of print marketing. Okay, they're not. Okay, cool, let's try that. And let's understand what are ways that we can be apart from them, one-up them, show a better service, bring a better value. And this is the game here. And that's all has to trade through that message of that marketing. And so, let's see what this says. Are there any good business plan outline you want to include in-depth market analysis to show just how you expect that business to align? And that's exactly kind of what I'm leaning on there is got to know this stuff. You know, the direct and indirect competitors, make sure you include both when discussing how you'll differentiate your business from theirs. This is exactly what you've got to know so that if you go and ask an investor for $1 million to open up a dispensary, they're going to ask you, well, man, there's 45 dispensaries in a 10-mile radius of where you are. How do you think you can come in there and compete? Well, you better know what to say to him. But guess what? You don't get that $1 million check that you need. And you could have saved yourself the time and the headache to realize, you know what? Damn, I didn't realize there's 45 dispensaries around me. Shit. And you know how many times I see this happen? Quite a bit. And so do your homework, do your due diligence, get a set of questions. I literally have a very in-depth due diligence questionnaire that I put all of these business opportunities I'm chasing through to ensure I can check every box and make sure I've asked every question and making sure it makes sense for me to go and invest capital into and go and try to compete. And so it's just super important to know this stuff. You know, who's that exact market? You're indirect. Would those be who are similar but not operating in another market? And so know that reach. Who is 20, 30, 50 miles away from you? Is there a way to differentiate to target people that are 50 miles away and bring them in? Well, why not develop a Costco model for a dispensary? No one's done this yet, where you can only buy ounces. You can only buy the max amount of extracts at one time. I don't sell onesies, twosies. This is the kind of thinking that it takes to understand how do you fit? Where is that target market that I can really fit into and maintain sustainability for the long term? That term is the key, sustainability. You've got to be able to look at this to be there and be competitive for the long term, or you might as well go home.
Yeah, you want to be different, right? And be unique. And because, I mean, you mentioned if there was 45 stores in the area, I mean, there could be still 45 different type of unique stores that speaks to 45 different target markets.
That's right. And some of them may be dirty. Some may be clean. Some may be too sterile. Some may feel like a doctor's office. Some may feel like a head shop. automatically we're showing you there's many different ways this experience can go. And you've got to figure out what that experience is you want to offer to this, to your audience and your consumer, this, so that they can keep coming back. And so, yeah, you got to know your competition. This is the name of the game. Who are you up against? Because you'll get squashed real quick if you realize the dispensary down the street has someone who worked at an Apple store for 5 years and knows high volume inventory control. And you know what? They can run circles around you and understand how to manage inventory and keeping shelf stock and selling inventory out from underneath you all day long. And you have no idea. Do the homework. Figure it out. You got to go and do some of this due diligence. I do what we call secret shopping all the damn time. If I'm going to go look at a business I want to buy or see how the dispensary functions, and actually if I'm going to go work with somebody, they're trying to hire me to help them on their dispensary. Well, I'll send my whole staff in there, give everybody else $50. You go in there and tell me how it was today. Go push some buttons and see how their staff acts. That arm yourself with, okay, their customer service blows. I know what I'm going to focus on, better customer service. That's a great simple niche. So these are the things you've got to look at to truly know how do you really compete and sustain.
Yeah. Yeah. And even when it comes, say, if you're growing, yeah, you can grow mass produce. You know, there's plenty of Budweisers out there. But you also can niche down and be very boutique or craft. Or even different genetics, right? You can, man, there's so many different genetics out there. You can cross and have your own exclusive genetics that you have.
Yep. One of the things, the reason why I'm getting back on the operations side is because there's a big lack of what I call cage-free or free-range cannabis. And you're probably laughing at me when I say that, but it's craft cannabis. It's I can't call it organic. We have an organic standard in cannabis called Clean Green Certification. If y'all don't know it, check it out. It's the highest bar set for how you manage pesticide use, heavy metals use in soils, blah, 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 blah. They have a whole checklist. This is why I'm getting back in the sector. This is my niche. This is why I'm getting back into this. This is my focus, because less than 1%, y'all, less than 1% are growing this style of methodology. You know how many Whole Foods are out there and how many organic grocery stores that are out there? We're all are so worried about our food being that way, but no one's worried about their cannabis yet, which blows my damn mind.
Man, you're speaking to my heart. I mean, it's the reason why it's called Craft Cannabis Club. You know,
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, and I think it's true to the movement, right? I get where we're trying and we're going towards legalization and speaking about the business side of it and the tax revenue and all that, but at the end of the day, you know, this was about stopping people from getting arrested, allowing people to enjoy this plant, and it's not just about how much revenue that we can get, with the small and the batches and the craft of it, getting back to the art of it, yeah. You're speaking to my heart, man. You're speaking to my heart.
This is the future. This is the future. I mean, I'm not a Budweiser guy. I want some nice, you know, limited microbrewed flavor that I can get once a year, and I'm going to seek that out. Like, that's where it's at, you know?
Once a year, once that season. All right, let's go. We got to next. We're going to keep going.
So
we're going to talk about money. All right, we talked about, you know, yeah, I got this business and you know, it's going to be this massive grow. It's going to be, we're going to sell a lot. Well, all right, we need to see some, all right, how's this going to be profitable? How are you going to make money? It's one thing to say this is a billion-dollar industry. Okay, yes. But are you making $1 billion or multi-billion dollars? How are you going to do it? So can you talk to us about just the money side of the importance of it in your business plans, such as the forecasting and the capital, the startup expenses, thinking this stuff through, kind of how does this play into having a great business plan, which is going to end up getting you capital?
You really have to nail down this. I've got a big project I've been working on in Michigan for the last, call it 8 months. And I was on a call this morning with the team going through the financial model to fine tune every capital expenditure, every operating expense, realizing, you know what, we need to get 3 more quotes from 3 different vendors because this dude is way outpricing us on where we feel we need to be. These are the things where you truly learn where the money meets the road to get the business operational. And so you have to know this. It's understanding, you know, really you have this business idea and concept. So say from a cultivation standpoint, you really have to do a floor plan drawing You got to understand, how is this business going to function? I've got five flower rooms. Well, you know what? I designed this thing with no bedroom. Well, let me go back to the drawing board and redesign this. Okay, now I got less flower rooms so I can fit a bedroom in. Well, I got to get drying and curing. And you got to have this functional space to work in. Once you get this lined out, you've got to pay architects. You've got to pay all these different professional services, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, general contractors. You're now, if you're like some people, they hire me to come in and help on the cultivation side and help them network all these different vendors, help them source every bit of equipment so that when you've got this floor plan laid out, now we say, okay, this is how many plants is going to fit per square foot. This is the production capacity expected per square foot. So we know kind of all of these metrics. And you got to know all these metrics from one, what does it take to build this damn thing out, putting every bit of equipment in there? You better go get quotes and get the right information versus guesstimating. Don't guesstimate anything. Be as precise and accurate as you can. Lay out every single detail all the way down to the screws and the wood used. I hate to say that, but this is the contractor, the build-out cost. All of these things are so imperative so that when you do go to actually ask somebody for money and they give it to you, you don't come back to them 6 months later and say, you know what, I was wrong. I need a $6 shit.
Yeah.
Do not make that mistake. And so once you get this thing designed and you've got it laid out and you know all those capital expenditures, now we can look at it and say, okay, here's how much this thing can produce. Here's how much production I can do per square foot per year. Here's how much it's going to cost me to actually grow this shit. You got to know the cost of goods sold. Some of you may or may not know what this term is. You will get to learn to know what this. If you don't, you're going to go out of business. A lot of growers, I can ask them right now, and I can honestly say 90% of growers, we call them now and ask them, what is their cost of goods sold to grow a gram of cannabis? No one can tell you. Well, you know what I sure as can tell you, and I've got clients that can, because we ensure we are always checking this metric. We want to make sure we're not underproducing. If so, let's look at our protocols and standards and figure out what we got to do to get back on track. If you're not growing cannabis for a dollar a gram or less, you better retool your systems, your process, procedures, because over time, that price per pound, as you get to like Colorado prices, if you can't grow for a dollar gram or less, you're going to have a hard time competing and keeping your lights on and paying your staff, paying yourself. I see growers that can't even pay themselves because of this stuff. So you got to know this stuff. You got to know it in and out so that when you do go ask for it, you're not going to come back later and say, man, I screwed up. I way underestimated this stuff. I need an extra XYZ money to continue this project. You're going to get laughed out of the room. You're going to fall out on your face and you're going to have either a lawsuit against you or you're going to be up shit creek without a paddle trying to figure out how to swim. So,
yeah. And actually you see it a lot. I mean, you see a lot of stores that end up opening or grows and they, you know, again, you're looking at the best case. It's almost like you're getting married. The marriage is going to be great. She's a best ever, and there's nothing discouraging about marriage, but you also got to look at the worst case scenario too. Are you prepared for if things hit the fan or such as the market gets saturated, if there's changes in regulations? Are there stories of people that you know of that you have consulted that maybe didn't ask too much or didn't ask for enough? And it wasn't really because of necessarily the forecasting and looking at the expenses. It was more of there's stuff that happens that you just can't make up. It's like you think something's going to cost something, and in this industry it seemed like it's twice that.
Yep, here's a great example. So I've got a client in Oklahoma, actually a partner of mine. I said, listen, we need to install this technology and we need to hire this integrated pest management service to prevent powdery mildew and bugs. Oh, we'll be all right. Don't worry about it. I said, no, it doesn't work that way. This is a non-negotiable in my book, man. You have to do this. Oh, we'll be fine, man. I come from farming for 40 years, man. I got bugs taken care of. Don't you worry about it. Oh, okay there, Cowboy Joe. What happens? His first crop completely covered in powdery mildew. Dude, man, I need to call this service. Well, no shit. Here's the email I sent you 4 months ago telling you to call him. Here's the follow-up email the guy sent you saying, hey, call me so we can discuss this. And here's you not responding to his emails. Call this guy. Well, he waited. And his second round came out contaminated. And so now I'm looking at him saying, I'm your partner and I'm losing money here. Luckily, I didn't invest any money in this, but I did give him all the SOPs and processes on how to operate this. But the one SOP he didn't follow was the integrated pest management. And so now, finally back on track, finally making money because there's a high price per pound on a wholesale. But we're still playing catch up for the money we lost. I'm not even yet. Wow. Just these simple things. And you know what it cost him to do this?
Don't tell me.
Literally, it's about, it would have been about $2,500 he could have spent, that instead he lost over $100,000. Okay. This is how silly people are, because they want to cut corners. And don't never mind my experience and why you partner with me and why you pay me all this money to give you the consultant information. You're just going to ignore it. That's why I'm getting back in operations, man. I'm over it. Nobody wants to listen to you, you know? And so I'll listen to myself, because I've been there, done that. And I've seen what happens. And I've made the mistakes too many times over the last 25 years growing this damn plant. We don't make those things anymore, because we figured out how to not make the mistake. We figured out the right way to do it.
I mean, that kind of leads us to the next tip. I mean, as far as strategizing to operate, and you just talked about the pest management and having SOPs. Can you speak a little bit more about those standard operating procedures and the operation strategy overall to be profitable? Because if the guy would have followed that strategy, he would be more profitable. Well, he would have been profitable right now instead of paying cash.
I'm gonna throw this guy under the bus that I spoke to this morning. He made a comment to me about how I like to house my mothers in my bedroom, because I want to utilize the rest of the space for flowering and not take up space for bedroom and for mother rooms. And he says, oh, you're going to get cross contamination. And I was like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, yeah, your staff after lunch, they all go to work and dab, and they come back in, and the whole rest of your day is shot. I says, well, damn, it sounds like you work for a shitty ass company to know how to manage people. Because where I come from, I run a very tight ship, and it's all based off of software that's task management, meaning every single clone all the way to harvest, and even from the drying and the curing and the packaging, is the same exact dance from day one, day 10, day 20, day 40 to harvest. Everything is the same. It's the same exact waltz. It's the exact same steps that I'm taking. Nothing changes. And so if you follow these things to a T, and I use software that tracks everything, it should take you 20 minutes to transplant X amount of plants. And it should take so many to cut so many plants. Every time you're tasked to do something, you got to log in and log out. So at the end of the day, I can see that everything get done that has to get done. If not, why didn't it get done? And let's get on the track tomorrow to get completed. But really, it's also showing me who did their job the most efficient, who took longer to do the task than it was supposed to be done. And I can quickly mitigate the issue and say, hey, what happened today, man? You were 25% slower than normal. Then, you know, the last 3 weeks, you had no problem with this task. Well, it went on today. I can see this in real time and really keep a thumb on people, versus me and my staff goes and gets dabbed out at work, dude, and they come back and they work like shit. Fuck that. Excuse my language. Where I come from, play that shit. Here's the thing. I'll go and dab with them all day at lunch and come back and run circles around every one of them. If they can't keep up, go home. I will find somebody that can perform. I'm here for peak performance. And I'm going to set up a system and a process in a way to allow these people to get to peak performance. I make work fun. I study this line of thinking called flow. None of you ever heard of the Flow Research Collective? Check this shit out. It'll blow your mind. Alter states of consciousness, peak performance. I design workflow and lean manufacturing processes so that I can make my staff get fired up on coming to work every day, being stoked on it, slapping high fives when they leave, and they can't wait to come back in the next day to do the job. That's how you design this stuff. Either you got people looking for a job and getting just an hourly paycheck, or you got people who are looking for a career, and you can develop these people for the big picture. And this is a strategy. You got to come in there and manage people. The plant work is simple. It's easy. You got to manage people. And this is the big component on the strategy, whether it's dispensaries, whether it's grows, extraction, the people are your biggest assets. And this is where you've got to put the focus so that that strategy can propel that company, be that catapult, because that's your biggest assets. You have got to use them as part of that strategy.
Now, it seems like, I mean, it's beautifully said. And it seems like there's different layers to this strategy as well. Is that right? There's different, whether it's for the team. I mean, you have this overall strategy, but it seems like you break it down to even different management levels, different.
Everything's objective. Everything is measurable. If you can't run your business and measure everything that you're doing, how do you understand your success? We need immediate feedback, right? You got to get this immediate feedback. And so the task management is a one way. You know what? I'm also taking analytics every single day on the grow rooms, on the temperature, the humidity, the CO2, the vapor pressure deficit. How are those performing? Are they modeling like my past success rooms that I've had? what is the yield performance per square foot out of this room? Why is it lower or higher this time versus the last time this room did it? How come it's different from the other three rooms that I'm growing? How do you take that information, look at it, and really turn it around to capitalize, to put dollars back in your pocket? Everything has got to be measured. Everything has got to be able to give you direct, immediate feedback so that you can act accordingly. Without these tools, without having the analytics, running traditional spreadsheets and hand notes and stuff, that stuff has worked. But man, I tell you, I'm a lot better at my game now that I got these other tools, man. And there's an element of AI coming into this stuff too that's now helping us and now getting smarter for us. And so use technology, use this stuff, as there are many layers or so many different components to this side, man. It really is.
I mean, on that note, as far as with the technology is, talking about even like third party vendors and distributors, can you speak more on the operating procedure as far as with, you know, say you are a retail store and, you know, you're going to not grow your own product if you're not vertically integrated and you're not growing, you're going to have to work with another outside vendor or a distributor. Is it important also to have operating procedures on how those relationships work as well?
100%. Everything from how product intake and product is going to be put on the shelves to how do we handle cold calling? How do we handle the resources that are bringing in product that want us to resell it for them? As a retail store, luckily in most markets, you're going to have people pounding on your door, cold calling, trying to bring samples and products by to show it to you. It is your job to come up with a system and protocol with either your manager or whoever it is on your team, maybe it's yourself, to have a quality control due diligence process. And one, the biggest question I always ask is, can you keep the product on my shelf monthly, weekly? If I call you and say, I sold out in 2 days, I need you here the next day, can you fill this up? If they can't answer those questions like you want to, then you got to realize, okay, this other group can. They can fulfill that need for me. You've got to get to the nitty gritty, and you have to really develop this standard operating procedure so that you can do it over and over and over again and truly understand what vendor is going to meet your expectations and give you what you need versus realizing, you know what, shit, I forgot to ask him that question. I'm screwed, man. I got huge demand for this product and I can't get it for another month. I wish I'd have asked him that crap. And this happens all the time. I just blows my mind all the time. Like one of my favorite flower varieties, I go buy it at this place and I go in there and say, man, I'm not going to have it for another month. And I'm like, well, how come? We can't stop selling it. I'm like, have you thought about growing more of it? And they look at me like, you know, it blows my damn mind.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of room to compete in this industry. And it's a lot of ways that you can still excel. Cause yeah, it's amazing how it's like going to a chicken shop and there's no chicken. And it's like,
What the hell?
Okay.
That happened before. You know, this is what happened. And so
awesome. Thank you. I mean, Ellis, I'm going to open up. If you guys are still watching us and you're still in tune, please, again, you can ask live Q&As. You can ask us questions as well. Let us know what you like. Let us know some of your biggest takeaways so far. Hopefully this has been knowledgeable for you, was worth it, and you guys have some things that you can actually be actionable. You could take this information. But even, I mean, we did talk about a lot. We talked about the five different tips. We talked about the business model. And how important it is to organize that model. We talked a glimpse into your business plan as far as the overview, the objectives, the executive summary. We talked about why the market matters, what kind of competition is out there, indirect or direct. We talked about the money as far as, you know, putting that down in your business plan, the importance of thinking through not just best case, but also worst case. We got into our last tip just now, which was the strategies to operate internally and also externally. And that's a lot. It's sometimes you're going to need that extra help or someone to help consult you. It'll help walk you through that, which, you know, here is a shameless plug. We got Ellis. Can you tell us a little bit more about the American Cannabis Consulting Company and kind of how, I know you said you're trying to get away from it from a little bit now and you're getting into more hands-on, but, are you still taking on clients, or can you give us a little bit more insight about that?
Yep, you bet. So American Cannabis Company, we are still a full service consulting company. I have yet to acquire a license and get in the operations side yet. So right now, this is what our sole focus is, and it'll be this way for probably the next 12 to 18 months. So as a company, I helped start this company about eight years ago. And so really what we do as a company is we do everything from business plan writing, financial modeling. I do any of your design work around dispensaries, cultivation facilities, extraction facilities. We do application work. I've written a ton of applications and had a ton of success writing applications across the US as well as Canada. Done a ton of work in the Canadian market. Bring a lot of the experience I have up there down to the US because there's a federally run program, very high standards compared to here to the US. And so I really sharpened my toolbox going up there and working. We can help you with, once your facility is approved and you're construction, I can help you with finding all of your subcontractors to get the project going from architects, engineers. I can help with the deployment of your business once it's built, helping you doing all the hiring, the training, bringing in the standard operating procedures, getting this thing going and putting money in the bank. And then I can do a short-term or long-term management arrangement with you if you're looking for that extended help. And really, it's based off performance. I've got to hit certain benchmarks and metrics that we hit so that I've got to earn my keep. I can't just come in there for a five-year contract and sit on my hand and say, hey, I'm making money, screw you. No, I've got to earn my keep. And it's put your money where your mouth is. And that's the way we look at the stuff. I've got to come in there and prove myself weekly, monthly, hitting key performance indicators and doing these things. So as a service company, that's what we do. We also manufacture a living soil called Soham Living Soils. Just Add Water is the coolest way to grow cannabis. Puts out a very high quality terpene profile plant, but it's just GFED for cannabis. Just Add Water, no chemicals, no fertilizers, no nothing. Very simple. And we also manufacture shipping containers that are turnkey grow solutions for cultivation. 14 light grow container can show up within 6 weeks of you ordering it. Great way to speed to market. Really simplified, cost effective way to grow the plant. So those are my shameless plugs. Kind of who we are as a company and what we do. We do specialize in cage-free cannabis. That's kind of what we look at as the organic side. That's kind of my niche and my passion. And what I'm really trying to promote in the industry is the sustainability from that perspective, that craft cannabis mindset, or also that we share that core value. And so, that's who we are. And I'm very passionate, as you can tell, about what I do. I'm a frequent weed nerd. I'm a student of the craft. And just grateful for the opportunity to be on the show today.
Awesome, man. I think, and I hope, again, you guys can start asking questions. We do have a couple questions we're about to answer in a few. But, man, I swear it's the value of, I mean, you think sometimes you get into the industry, or, hey, I can do this myself. I don't need no one to tell me what I need to do. I got this. I can Google it. Man, the value of having someone who has this experience to be able to help you forecast and think of things that you maybe not even think of, it's almost priceless, man. So I want to thank you for the help that you give out there. But we got a question going in. D Brown, what's up, D? He says, any advice for opening a bakery or infused dessert shop?
You bet, D Brown. Thanks for the question. Here's the thing. There's some great companies out there, one called BDS Analytics. These guys are taking data from every single market from retail stores, and they can really tell you what are the top five selling edibles in the marketplace? What are the top five or top 10 selling edibles in the marketplace? This will give you focus to see, wow, I wanted to do a brownie, but you know what? No one's buying brownies, man, out of the top 10 products. Don't do that. Figure out immediately from those analytics, that's going to tell you what your market snapshot looks like. But also think about from a perishable mindset. Can it be shelf ready for 6 months to a year? Is it going to go bad in 2 months and mold? Is the process to make it a pain in the butt and requires a specialty trained person to do it? Think about all of these things so that at the end of the day, how do you look at the cost of goods sold to produce it to be very lean, minimal specialization to train someone to do it, and making sure someone's going to damn buy the shit because you may make something that no one has any interest in. And so use those tools. And that should give you some focus and direction. But yeah, there's great products that fall in that category. Figure out how you fall in some of those ones that have been proven out there.
Awesome. Thank you. And sorry, D Brown, if we said she's.
Oh, sorry.
It's all good. We got Wells out there. He said, Uncle Earl, hey, what's going on, Robert Wells? What's going on, man? What's going on? Appreciate that. Would you say there's any difference of between a cannabis business plan versus a regular business plan?
No, you're going to ask yourself all the same questions. If you look at a table of contents, it's identical. So no matter what it is, and get online, folks. There's great resources for business plans. There's tons of table of contents out there. If you got questions on some of those line items and those on those things, you can Google and get so much more extrapolated information on all the stuff that goes into a business plan. Use these things. Internet is an encyclopedia of knowledge. It can give you the same stuff I can give you. Find the stuff, look at it, and read and learn, educate yourself. Nerd out.
Nah, I mean, once you have that passion for it, it's, man, oh man, I just spent 4 hours reading this. Oh shoot, didn't even think about that.
And that's exactly right.
A question about cost. What would you say a business plan? I guess to get the business plan started, to really get it to different investors, you don't have to have, obviously you may not already have your license. You still may be in the process of doing that. But if you're looking to get just a general plan to start getting capital, what do you think someone would need to invest into getting that plan together?
Okay, so I can tell you, we normally charge about $12,000 to $15,000 for a business plan. Then I will also charge about the same for a financial pro forma model. We are looking to reduce our prices. So there's people that do them out there for $1,000. Question is how in depth, how in detail. I sell templates, so you can buy templates from me. There's a lot of different services people will offer and do these things for you. And there's some good services. You can spend $1,500 and get a great little business plan that will kind of give you some direction on any of these kind. I don't offer those, but there are some good resources out there. I think there's kind of a range. I think anywhere from $500 I've seen them as low as, and like I said, 10, 15 grand is really where mine will fall in at when I'm doing a full vertical business, when I'm doing extraction, cultivation, and a dispensary. So I'm going to tell that full story of all three of those businesses in one business plan. And so if I'm extrapolating one of those independently, then that price goes down. So that's kind of a range for people.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you. We got a question from Clifton. What's up, Cliff? How would you start up a pre-roll cannabis business? I know it's different from state to state, but I guess, how would you start a pre-roll cannabis business?
Sure. I think what I would recommend is figure out the licensing of what type of license type you have to have. More than likely, they're going to require you to either have a cultivation license or some type of infusion or extraction license, which may sound kind of funny, but they're going to want to know, how do you handle this, especially if you're going to be rolling joints and sprinkling keef in there? Well, now you're actually kind of infusing cannabis. So that infused license may be what you have to do to house this kind of business. And so you normally, in California is where we've seen the true just pre-roll businesses really evolve. Most of these companies are vertical, or they are just taking excess material of their wholesale flower and rolling up in joints and just selling it along with their wholesale flower. And so I think you've got to do a little bit more research on where you're located, what type of license type is mandated. If you can just go get one of these licenses pretty easy over the counter, say like in Oklahoma, it's a matter of going and getting a lease on a space for probably 1,000 square foot or 1,500 square foot, figuring out your supply chain of where you get the material from, figuring out your cost of goods sold from how much it costs to do a paper, how much does the machine cost to run for that minute to roll that joint, what is the material going into it, what is the labor to run all of that, what's your overhead for the power. Figure out all those things and say, wow, it costs me $2.17 to roll one joint. I can sell these things for $9 all day long and look at my margin. Wow, I've got a $6 and something cents margin. Get the details, figure out how this business model could look and function. You got to ask yourself those questions, but figure out the licensing first. That'll be the biggest component to give you the direction.
Thank you. Yeah, and I could say, Cliff, in Michigan, you would have to get a processing license. You don't necessarily have to get a cultivation or a grow license. Your processing license, that could be for infused products, but also you can end up acquire the flower from another grower and then turn that into pre-rolls. So you naturally don't have to grow yourself, but you could also do it as a grower as well. So there's two different license types in Michigan you could acquire to do that type of business. So awesome. Again, if you guys have any more questions, we're about to wrap this up right now. We know Ellis has he's a very busy man. He has another stop he's gonna have to get to. I really appreciate him. I'll throw up the slide again with his contact information. That's his website right there. Are you local? Are you here in Michigan or are you Colorado? I don't know where
I'm Denver, Colorado based, man. I'm a mountain dude.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So I'm based in the mountains. My background, I'm actually an avalanche forecaster and snow scientist. I used to basically work in the mountains and controlling the slopes for avalanches, and would take clients up and down mountains to ski on them in remote areas of the world, like Kyrgyzstan, Central Asia, or in Alaska or Argentina. So I am an adrenaline junkie by education and trade and craft, but I've always been a cannabis grower and enthusiast for over 23, 24 years now. So,
awesome, man. I'm yet to come to Colorado. If I come out there, I'm done. Earl,
look me up. I'd love to host you, man. Break bread with you. I actually spend some time in Michigan, so I'd love to link up with you. Where are you based out of?
Detroit, man. We are downtown Detroit, baby.
Well, let's connect and break bread next time I'm out there, man. Love to get together and just chew the fat and just greatly appreciate this opportunity to get on onto the show, man. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you. And everybody, please reach out to him. He's a wealth of knowledge. I would attest to that. I'm sorry about the Broncos out there, Ellis.
It's okay. Sore subject. All right.
All right, everybody. We're going to have this recording for you guys to watch later as well. You can actually go to the Cannabis Therapy Network website. We're going to have our slides that we went through, the tips. It's going to be a free resource that you guys will be able to get. And, of course, the Craft Cannabis Club is a physical club. We also have an online place for the mature cannabis adults to connect and share resources, make connections. And we're cannabis friendly. And then the Cannabis Therapy Podcast, that's where we do a weekly podcast on YouTube and also in our private members group, our private members hub, where you guys, we have different topics. Here, this is a more of a business focused topic brought by Cannabis Club, Craft Cannabis Club. But the podcast is very general. We could talk about the science of cannabis, talk about growing about cannabis, we talk about the history of cannabis. We get into all that. So check that out as well. So, Ellis, I want to thank you one more time. And, man, I feel like I just want to keep talking to you. I don't know.
Well, Earl, it's a lot of fun. Maybe I'll have you on my podcast, and we'll have some more time to chat, man.
Awesome, Ellis. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Have a great day. Appreciate the opportunity, everyone. Appreciate you staying tuned in. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Peace out.